Okay. Next on our agenda, folks, we have something that really keys off of something that Peter said earlier. Peter nicely began our definition of inbound and outbound, you know, the things that you focus on, outbound, communicating to the analysts of the successes of your company, your strengths, the things that you want to update the analysts on. Well, that's super important from an outbound standpoint. From an inbound standpoint, leveraging the analysts in areas like strategy, road mapping, messaging, sales and channel enablement, you know, consulting expertise.
Were they not four chairs the same?
That's right.
Special.
You won the magic prize, Carolyn, by sitting in that chair. It's a, we'll tell you later what that actually is. You know, so being able to leverage the analysts as coaches is something very important, and actually something that the community in general actually wrestles with, either from a perspective of, gee, I'm not familiar or aware of how I can leverage the analysts as coaches. There's also been the perhaps occurrence of when you've attempted to leverage an analyst as a coach that maybe didn't work out so well. But in general, leveraging the analysts as coaches is something that we think is really important to focus on. And our question is it a myth or reality? So what I'd love to do is have each one of our panelists, I'm going to start with Carolyn, to introduce themselves and their role, and then actually describe for the audience why leveraging the analysts as coaches is important to them. Carolyn?
Okay. So Caroline Dennington in the high chair. I head up analyst relations at Symantec, so we're a global software organization, over $6 billion, protecting and managing people's information. The team is spread out. Actually, one of my team I can see in here, Patricia, who's over in Germany. We have people in APJ and also the US. So a very varied role, to say the least. I actually only recently moved into the global responsibility, and I was looking after EMEA before that for 7 years. In terms of using the analysts as coaches, we use them at various levels. So it's not just with our executives. It is also with some of our product managing or product marketing, product management or product marketing personnel. And that may be to work them through the Magic Quadrant system. So lots of different areas, and I'm going to touch on a little bit about the difference of mentoring and coaching.
Yeah, exactly. There was something, Carolyn, that you brought out in your discussions around the difference between analysts as a mentor and a coach. I think it's great to add to the definition. Please share that with us.
Okay, yeah. So, and I think it's an important aspect, and I think because I've been a mentor and a coach internally at Symantec, sometimes people don't realize the differences, and I know there's probably some very good explanations on Wikipedia if you go on there, and they can probably do it much better than I. But a mentor or mentee is normally somebody who asks for specific advice, and they want to get that advice to help them in their career, so to get to somewhere relatively quickly, overcome a hurdle, and it's usually pretty in an informal relationship. A coach is a very different skill set, though, and it's a relationship that has to be very structured. And I think that's very important, that when you do go into the coaching aspect with an analyst, that you have a structured program in place. Because if you just do something that's ad hoc for your stakeholder, whoever that may be at whatever level, it really isn't going to work. And they have to have an element of trust and openness as well, and really credibility with the analyst that they're going to be working with. And that specific analyst may not even be in an area that you're focused on. So it might not be one of your analysts that writes your magic quadrant or a piece of research. 9 times out of 10, actually, the analysts that we've worked with actually are not Symantec key watchers, but they're an analyst who really has that gravitas and can hold their own at a certain level. So I think that it's important to work through that aspect and to get it right and make sure that the analyst can be a coach and isn't there just to listen and, you know, not forge that relationship.
That's great. June, we'll jump to you and your role and the importance of analysts as coaches to you.
Sure, thank you. June Rotrud, BT Global Services, and I head up industry analysts and consultant relations. And as my colleagues and I, we've been talking about this, I think this really resonates exactly what you said, Caroline, is analysts as coaches is really become part of the culture at BT Global Services. That has taken us quite a while, as my client director knows quite well. And as Peter pointed out, what I think is really important to understand as an AR pro is you need to know your business. You need to know your clients within the business at all levels, not just the executive suite. What's keeping the sales team up at night? What's keeping your marketing organization, your CMO? All of those things, and then, as Peter said, solve problems. So figure out, and working with your client director, what are the propositions, the value propositions that Peter went through that you can bring to the table? Identify your client, map those propositions to them, and then you could solve the problems. And I think it becoming part of the culture is when you deliver results. So the more you could deliver the results and then measure them, build trust, build those relationships, it works, and then it continues.
That's great. Andrea, love for you to introduce yourself. And I think you've had you've got a great story about how leveraging the analysts, to make some key market timing decisions.
That's true, Jeff. My name is Andrea Barbaro. I'm the strategy analyst for Eurotech. Eurotech is a much smaller company than the one that has been introduced so far. We are around 100 million euros turnover worldwide. And my role is working in staff to the CEO in defining the strategy and the business model of the company together with the organizational structure. And the relationship with Gartner is a strategic asset for us. That's why I'm involved in the coordination and supervision of the activities of our guys in the marketing team together with the analysts. And actually, analysts as coaches has been a nice surprise for us. It was something that we were hoping to have but not trusting to have, so to say, ever since started with in mind the idea of increasing the Eurotech brand awareness, having more visibility and credibility on the market. But very soon we found ourselves engaged in not just briefing the analysts, but being briefed by the analysts about which can be the niches within a certain market that can be more suitable for our products, and especially which can be the markets that can be more ready for our products. So it's not only a matter of working and discussing with the analyst about the content of the strategy, it's also a matter of understanding the timing, the right time for the investments, especially if it comes to pushing an innovation into a market. As a matter of fact, innovation is one of the key sources of competitive advantages for Eurotech. And hence, when we introduce an innovation in the market, we're doing something that probably nobody has done before. We are together creating the market. There's no reference point. And so it's important to reduce the risk of making the wrong move in the wrong moment.
Yeah, it's great. You guys have such complementary stories, two executive-level stories. Andrea, from a product development, timing the market. Claire, yours is, I think, more about regional AR, so I'd love to share your story.
So I'm Claire Loxley. I look after the analyst and media relations within HP for our enterprise services business across the EMEA region. So the area that we were looking at is, it's sometimes people think about how you use the analysts are at the global level, and there's a lot of ways where you can leverage the analysts as coaches at the regional level as well. And June touched on, and Caroline touched on as well, about using it within the sales and the marketing and in the pursuit space. And so one of the areas that sometimes starts with a briefing relationship, and you keep that sort of kind of quarterly contact, maybe through briefings, but you need to extend it over time. And so we've been working at building a buddy program where you identify the right analyst to work with the right, execs or subject matter experts. And I agree with Caroline, it needs to be a very structured approach. You need to have a kind of idea as to which analysts work best with which execs, and how you might build that over time as a program. And I think getting the sales guys involved in your analyst activity and having the sales guys understand how they can leverage the analysts as coaches during their pursuits, how they can use that to test their value propositions, I think is a key thing.
So it seems like you guys have gone through some learnings that you've realized that leveraging the analysts as coaches is important. Mike, we'll turn to you from the analyst and research leadership perspective. What's your take on how important leveraging the analyst as a coach is to you and the analysts?
Thanks. So my name is Mike Harris. I lead the technology and service provider research team within Gartner overall. So I report into Peter Sondergaard, and I look after the 250-odd analysts that actually support you all and your firms. We wake up every day and figure out how can we help you grow your firms more profitably, more quickly, and make better decisions. That would be what I call, in university parlance, our major. Our minor is in helping the technology buyers figure out how to work with you all, how to source, deploy, and manage the best technologies for their solutions, because a lot of the analysts in my team have excellent experience in managing these technologies and selling the technologies and in working them over time. So I'm here on the panel to represent the research perspective, the Gartner perspective, and the interesting thing is the analysts don't view themselves as your best friends, but they don't view themselves as your enemies either. And I know that in a contentious Magic Quadrant escalation, it can feel that way at times, but I can tell you that the analysts don't like that process any more than you do, and we try to avoid it, frankly. What we aim to do is to be as fair, as objective, and as impartial as humanly possible. That is our absolute mantra, and that's what we operate under at all times. And in that capacity, whether it's as a mentor-mentee or as a coach relationship, what we aim to do is to provide you the most unbiased advice that we can. And admittedly, some of us are better than others at telling you that your baby maybe isn't the most attractive baby we've ever seen. Some are very tactful and great at doing that, more so than others. But the intent is from our heart. We mean to tell you that if you do these few things, your baby can be really attractive, at least in the eyes of your target customers. So from my perspective, the analysts actually really enjoy being asked their opinion. We're an opinionated lot, and we'd love to share with you things that we think that you might be able to do in your control to improve your position in the market. So we'd always welcome that coaching or mentor relationship.
That's great. You know, June, I wanted to kick off really the next question with you, which is a bit of a gauge on how important leveraging the analysts as coaches has become to you and your program. And let me pose a hypothetical situation. You've described how it's become important. What happens if you had a new leader, a new executive leader, who came into the organization that didn't get it?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and I'm sure you've all faced that in some form or another. Because it's become such a great part of our culture, we've been very lucky. However, it's not without its issues or its bumps along the way. And just as an example, I did have an executive who said, well, I don't want to meet with Gartner because I have to brief them. Or what if they say something, you know, me or my team don't like, or in front of my team, and it's going to cause an issue. And what the client director and I do, it's interesting, is we identify really the pain points for that executive. What do they need to achieve over the next, you know, 6 months, say a year? And then sit down and say, okay, what's in our toolkit and how we can help you? And I do have to say, when you have a doubter like that, the most important thing is to plan extremely well. Not only identifying what he needs or she needs, but also what the analyst can bring to the table and ensuring that analyst is very well prepped for the engagement, including the fact that you have a doubter. And then I also, what I like to do is team them up with one of their colleagues who's had a good experience. So while I'm working to do my prep, what we often do is we go to an executive who's had a great experience and say, can you have an informal chat? And I will say, I can't stress enough the preparation, setting expectations on both sides of the table and flawlessly delivering is critical, because when you have a doubter, you get one shot.
So being successful in execution sounds really important.
Absolutely.
And Andrea, I'd love to, you know, turn the question to you in terms of, you know, you position yourself nicely as a modestly sized, you know, technology provider. Is your AR program here to stay now, given the successes that you've had in contributing to the product development cycle?
Yes, for sure, definitely, because we have learned that thanks to these discussions with the analysts, where we not just tell something to them, but we also listen to them and together think about things, we can really take to another level our strategy. I would put it this way. It's you know, dealing with innovation and having to introduce into the market innovation, most of the time you guess. To a certain extent you guess. But there are different kinds of guesses you can do. It's just a blind guess, or you can have the most educated guess that you can possibly do. This is what we are having thanks to the relationship with the Gartner analyst, and I think it's a great achievement.
That's great. So you've taken the risk out of decision making to
a
significant
degree. Yeah, it's a risk minimization, yes.
Yeah. And Claire, you know, in your program, tell us a bit about how your success in the region has contributed to the success of the regional AR program, and what results has that had on sort of the corporate rest of team's perspective on regional AR.
Okay, so before I answer that one, I just want to pick up on the preparation piece because, you know, the key thing that you try to do is obviously try to encourage the interactions between your company and Gartner. And that's that balance between controlling and managing. And I think because you want to get the interactions happening, but as an AR person, you want to be able to keep some control over that. So I think the from the regional to the kind of global piece, I think the key thing is finding the kind of advocates, you know, the people who kind of get it and the ones who, you know, and using those as kind of salespeople within your own organization for your AR program as well. And, you know, a number of other colleagues of mine here as well, you know, who've got a few good advocates within their own businesses as well. And you can also use those, you know, to help you get your own AR program up and running as well. So I think, you know, the success comes from being able to measure, which June brought up, you know, which is always hard, I know, but having those advocates, you can kind of give the anecdotes of the good stories. And just after one briefing call even, you know, our executives now are head of the business globally, you know, would say, in that call, there's one or two things I learned which were useful, you know, even just from the questions that came in a half-hour call, even though it was a briefing, you know, and that builds over time then to kind of build that trust and that kind of realization that it's a valuable use of their time.
So it sounds like you've, you know, contributed to the knowledge base of the regional executives mm-hmm. to help them be more successful. You know, Carolyn, one of the things that you've done to contribute to sort of the overall thought leadership in AR, which is AR as a profit center. Yeah. Tell us what you meant by that.
Okay, so I think probably for most of us in this room, we all sit in a marketing or a comms function, so we're a cost center at the end of the day. You know, everybody sees this as an overhead potentially in the business. So although we'll never be a true profit center in analyst relations, because that's probably run as a very separate business and not many of us probably want to go down that route, and be held overly responsible. We do need to prove the value to our stakeholders, and I know my account exec is in here at the back, and he hates that word from me, value, but it's the thing that I have to prove in everything that I do, and so where we've used the analysts as well in a coaching aspect is to work with us on things like the magic quadrants. As Nancy will tell you, we're in a lot of magic quadrants. So we have to make every magic quadrant really work for us. And the analysts have given us some good advice and coached us through how to use them and really benefit from them. And what we do with each of the MQs, primarily the ones that we lead in, we obviously purchase the reprints, and we work very closely with the marketing teams, the product marketing, and the sales teams so that they're fully educated on how to utilize those documents. And we track, we have an in-house built system for lead generation so that we can track from the pipeline for a certain product that is related to a magic quadrant how much revenue is being attributed from people clicking on through we gate the document on the site, on the website, and then link it back into the pipeline and look at the deals that have been potentially closed from those leads. And that is, you know, I think, June, you probably do something similar as well. And that has really showed that we add value.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great story, June.
Yeah.
I know you've got a great story to share there.
I feel like you take it from dark art to adding to the bottom line. And what I figured very quickly is it was a nice to have AR, ACR, and then I said, no, that's not good enough. In the environment that we're in the economy in these times, you really have to be able to deliver value, and you have to measure it. Any great program is measured. So what we did, very similar to what you did, and I know, Claire, we've talked about this, it's taking that magic quadrant or taking that engagement, that coaching engagement, or taking that help for sales and figure out what it leads to. And just like you said, is it leading to a pipeline? Is it leading to a close? Is it supporting a close? Is it helping on a renewal? And we specifically measure on deals influenced, on pipeline, and we Siebel track now. So my CMO gets every quarter a review of all the deals that we've supported. And in my scorecard, we also list every single deal over a certain amount of money and the type of activity that we engaged. So now I have a measurable target. My team has it. And it also changed the mindset of my whole team. It's we're delivering to the bottom line. And sales, it completely changed the way sales looked at us, and it completely changed the way the executives looked at us, and it elevated the program within the business.
Does this mean your quota is going up?
Yes.
You know, one of the things that actually came up today in a one-on-one inquiry today here was all about, Mike, something that we chatted a bit about and we'd love your perspective on, which is we talk about leveraging the analysts early and often. Mm-hmm. And that means early in development cycles, early in decision cycles, early in those messaging cycles. And how can we, as Gartner and as the analyst, Mike, help our clients, our vendor clients, especially when you have skeptical product managers, skeptical executives, share early without that showing up in the research? I'll phrase it that way.
Sure. So a couple of points. First is, if you think of the life cycle that your companies are going through, you'll start out, and it's a continuous loop more than a linear line, but you start out with a strategy, right? You're trying to understand where you're going to go after, how you're going to evolve that strategy, what new markets you might enter, be they geographic or vertical industry or other customer segment. And then you're trying to figure out how do you define the products and services, how do you alter those in order to best target those market segments and customer segments. And then you're trying to figure out, all right, how am I going to go to market? So after you've actually created the product or service, it's how am I going to message it, how am I going to position it, how am I going to ensure that it's differentiated from my competitors. And finally, there's an individual deal chase. So you're involved in an actual engagement. You're trying to say, my account team is meeting with this company tomorrow. How do I ensure that their value proposition is actually going to resonate with that particular industry? So if you think of that entire segment, most of what we talk about is at the back end of that. So it's after the product is designed. You're now briefing us on something that you've already done, and you're looking to ensure that we communicate that properly to the market. If there's one thing that I could encourage everyone to do, it's to back up about 6 or 9 months to the point where you're just formulating how might you enter that market, what positioning might you use for that vertical industry, and gosh, maybe there's more input than what our existing sales teams would have in terms of what value proposition should be delivered. So in terms of engaging us earlier in that process, it can be really helpful. Second point, and this is where Jeff was going, is there's a distinction, very, very specific within Gartner, between an inquiry and a briefing. A briefing is open to anyone, regardless of client status. If you are doing something in the market and our buy-side end-user clients want to know about it, we want to hear from you. And we will ask for that briefing. You might notice that our analysts are really quiet on the other end of those briefings, and your executives are saying, hello, are anybody home? Why aren't you listening? Why aren't you asking questions? It's very much intentional because the briefing is meant to be a one-way conversation from you to the analyst. Inquiry is reserved for clients, and that's where you get the two-way conversation. The challenge that I see in working with so many tech providers is that those lines seem very blurry to you, although we try to make it very clear to our analysts. And what we say is, anything that's done in an inquiry is under what we call a trusted advisor relationship. What it means is that we're not going to take that information and say, oh, well, Symantec just said they're going to do this. I'm going to take it out and put it in the next document that I write about them. A, that ruins our relationship, and it actually ruins the credibility of the Gartner franchise. What we say within an inquiry, whether you are a buyer or a seller of technology, is held as a trusted advisor. So we don't go blathering that to the market. Anything you tell us in a briefing, we absolutely go blathering to the market because that's the intent of a briefing, is to ensure that we can represent you. My point is, if you can engage yourselves and your executives early in the process, use us very much in an inbound capacity through the inquiry route, and get our inputs early in terms of which client segments you might want to pursue, what I have seen is that that's where the greatest value of a Gartner relationship, no matter what you spend with our relationship, whatever you do is optimized if you engage us early in that process.
Now, Carolyn, that's great, Mike. Carolyn, you have a great story about how you overcame executive resistance.
Yep.
So lovely to share that. I think it's a great illustration of this.
Okay. So this was going back a few years, several years, actually, and this is sometimes, and there was probably a slight fault on my part, and it came back to what June was saying, setting the expectation with your stakeholders. So we're fortunate at Symantec, actually, that the AR team does often get invited to the sales leaders meetings and the executive leaders meetings. And they ask us from time to time to bring in an analyst. And so we work very closely with the analysts at Gartner to make sure that we get it right. And I thought I was getting it right that day. So I won't say who the analyst was, but he did a brilliant job, actually. But I think because he was a futures analyst and was talking very much about what was coming, there were some people in the room who got that. They had that mindset. But the key person I wanted to get to, the big boss, he wasn't at the time in that frame of mind. And the topic came up as social media and Facebook. So, of course, we're several years back. And the analyst started talking, you know, about this disruptive technology and that if you don't get your marketing teams engaged and, you know, run campaigns and so on, then you're going to be a real laggard and everybody's going to be out there. And he kept talking about Facebook and, you know, introduced Twitter and things like that. And the exec, he was there on his BlackBerry. I think iPhone wasn't even out at that time. And I thought, you know, he's just not getting this. So anyway, at the end of the meeting, everybody was very polite to the analyst. Off he went. And I got called back in, and the exec said to me, what the heck was that all about? Where was he going with that? Facebook's for kids. You know, my kids are going to play with this. What is he on? Anyway, I kept the analyst engaged, and I went back to him with my feedback, and I said, you know, we need to keep you going. We need to convince the stakeholder that this is going to happen. About 6 months down the line, maybe a little bit less, I was in the exec's meeting room, and he had a brochure there, and there's an article about Facebook, and he had some stuff up on his screen, and he was talking to me about something, and I said, oh, what's that on your desk? And he just looked at me and went, yeah, you were right. Gartner was right. So, yeah, it does happen, but, you know, just saying about the level, you know, setting the level and the expectation, I think that was the mistake on my part that time, but luckily it came good.
So it sounds like he'll take your recommendations the next time as well.
Well, now, that analyst, I mean, he has a name in Symantec, and, yeah.
Is it a good name?
It's a good name. Okay, this guy who might be...
Is it an expletive?
Yeah, no, he might be a little bit way out there, but he knows
stuff. So at the executive level, you know, great story. Andrea, another area of resistance and an obstacle that we often encounter is with product development. You know, as Mike nicely pointed out, they don't want this person from this company called Gartner coming in and, you know, talking about that their baby is ugly. How do we overcome resistance with development?
Well, you know, it's really a matter of clarifying that, except you don't have an enemy on the other side. You have a potential ally, actually. You have someone that can show to you a different way to look at the same things. And actually, it's funny because what was a strong point of resistance and the source of inertia at the beginning of a relation turned out to be a very valuable thing because we realized that our marketing guys had a different jargon. They were used to call stuff in their own way. And it did work inside the company, but this was an obstacle in briefing the analyst because the analyst had a different way of structuring things and positioning what we were doing within a more broad framework. And so I think that in this case, it was really the ability of our marketing guys to make a step back and say, okay, I want to trust you for a while and I'll try to reposition my content into your framework and let's see if this works. And it did work in the end because first, the communication speed up.
Yeah.
And second, we also found a way that was more standard and more suitable to tell our story and to communicate outside our innovation and even to be able to communicate our unique proposition in front of the customers.
And so was it that product development didn't have to focus so much on the branding and the messaging, they could focus on the development?
Yes.
Is that okay? That's great. You know, Claire, you talked about sort of overcoming one common area of resistance, which many regional marketing sales execs love to work face-to-face, you know, with the analysts. And you went through an evolution of getting them comfortable with the analysts and then moving more towards an inquiry-based conversation. That's a critical. How did you do that? What were some of the steps that you used?
Okay, I think most people probably start many interactions as a briefing, as we've talked about. That's often, you know, where you start with the volume of activity, and often the first step that people look at is some kind of consulting engagement, like a SaaS or something. And because people like to meet people face-to-face and have some engagement face-to-face. but it's often a one-off engagement. And I guess one of the mistakes I guess we made maybe a couple of years back was kind of to invest some money into the SaaS engagements, but without the programmatic approach towards that. So you might have had a one-off engagement, but you need to kind of keep that sustained engagement. And I think people are used to talking on the phone, but you do need to complement that with some face-to-face engagement. And using things like the symposium or summits and things like that to get your people together, I think, is always good, because it is, after all, a relationship. And you need to get that trust. You need to make sure that both sides are listening to each other. And I think the opportunity of the seat and the inquiry access is to have that sustained interaction. And we had an example recently where one of our seat holders was looking to kind of do some work on a forthcoming announcement, and was going down the route of a SaaS engagement and working with the client team. They said, actually you'd be better off setting up a couple of inquiry calls, to prepare for them properly, not just pick up the phone, to do your prep, to send things in advance, because actually you need to talk to lots of different analysts. They are adjacent analysts in different areas, and rather than try and pull them together, try and do it through a series of inquiry calls. And so I think, getting people used to regular access and regular phone access, because it's more practical, I think is a good way to keep that relationship and sustain it over time and have the program behind it, so that you as an AR person can keep control, control probably the wrong words, but manage that appropriately so that you can ensure that the outcomes are delivered.
How would you describe those outcomes? Have they resulted in better messaging, better traction in the marketplace? Is there something that your colleagues would say, the regional AR program really delivered X?
So I think, you touched on earlier about the execs having that ear to the market and sort of being better informed. I think, that's a kind of a soft measure, but it kind of keeps the execs kind of externally focused. I think we've got some good examples where it's been input. It was used as input into the development of a marketing campaign. So some of those early discussions helped them build a more relevant marketing campaign. And then more recently as well, I can see lots of benefits through some of the sales engagements. So where the sales guys are using the analysts to help coach them in their pursuits, and building better propositions and helping them in their competitive differentiation as well. So that's where you get the specific business, outcomes as well.
That's great.
Bid development is interesting. That's a new angle as well. Every time we come out in a report, we go right away to the bid teams. So we put out, the marketing, the EDMs, we enable marketing. But we also ensure the bid organization has it and they're fully leveraging it. And then we go to, and we do a bit of a PR campaign, is then we go to each of the deal leads by region, by vertical, and ensure that they're knowledgeable on how to leverage that report when they go out to do their pitches. So a big part of this is educating your clients on how to leverage the program.
So June, a good segue to one of the key set of recommendations that we wanted to get from you guys on where to start if you were to describe a formula for this. First, is this an art or science? Where would you say it sits?
Well,
right now?
I said earlier, I don't think it's a dark art. I do think that there's a massive opportunity for AR professionals at this point, because a business cannot be successful if they continue to be internally focused. So you could become that. You could bring the outside in and leveraging Gartner. I think the most important thing I could say as well is to know your business and to know Gartner and to find the ways to map those into the business, delivering value. Also, ensure they're treating you differently than they think. I initially would get, you're all about awareness and getting us in MQs. No, it's a lot more than that. So I've encouraged my team, and I do regular calls around the business telling them, did you know that this is what we do? And that paid off. I did that for about a year, and I partnered with Gartner to do that as well. And how do you leverage Gartner? How do you leverage your AR program? And I think it's about planning. It's about being patient and leveraging all the resources available, executing flawlessly, and then measure, and show everyone your results.
There's one critical success factor that that I think you left out that I love about your program, which is, tell us about how you align the metrics between AR and the execs.
Yeah, so there came a time when we were leveraging or going so much into the business to ask them for support, whether it's on an MQ submission, whether it's on another initiative. And it got to the point that I said to the executives, well, how about you put this on your scorecard, because it's only on mine now, so why don't you carry some of the weight? And it ended up being successful in that the majority of the executives we work with now have it on their scorecard, some form of measure, whether it's interaction with the analysts, the consultants, support of submissions, the outcome on submissions. And then they also put those metrics onto their team. So when we go to submit for Magic Quadrant, it's a team effort now. It's not the AR team. And I think, too, what happens there is you start to build a trust and a bond that we're in this together, because this isn't my placement. This is the business's placement. And when you go external, you know, this is a reflection on all of us. So the more you can get them to buy into what you do and see the value, partner with them, and then formalize where you can to measure it together, and I think get some skin in the game.
That's great. That's great. So aligning metrics, delivering the value, execution. Carolyn, you talked a lot about that credibility. Mm-hmm. Andrea, taking the risk out of the development cycle. Mike, what would you say from the analyst perspective would be sort of your top three recommendations on how to use the analysts as coaches?
Sure. Actually, if you don't mind, I want to take an audience poll. It's an informal poll. You won't be recorded. But
the camera's rolling, Mike.
I know. But in a moment, I want you to raise your hand, and I want you to raise a number of fingers. If you raise one finger, it means that your executives would never get in front of an analyst unless they are very prepared with a briefing. They know their message. They're going to stay on message. They're going to deliver that information directly to the analyst. That would be a rating one. On the other end of the spectrum is a rating five fingers. That would be where your executives have regular interactions. Most of them are in the form of questions. So they're not briefing anybody. They're not prepared, actually. They're simply setting up the inquiries to get that information in from the analyst community as frequently as possible, and this would happen several times a year. And if I could just ask for a show of hands, we call it a five-finger vote. One, and you can pick in between, right? So one would be only if you're extremely well-prepared. Five would be very informal, asking questions. Can I see a show of hands as to how your teams tend to deal with this? I see a lot of threes, fours, twos, twos. That's good. That's good. I see a one. I see one. Hold out back there, sir. I see you. The camera's caught you. I apologize. But it's a great example, because even within this community, and you all are leaders in the AR community, you all have a range of different interaction modes with Gartner. And if there's a few recommendations that I would recommend, one of them is to move towards a five, at least a four, in the sense of identify those executives who might get it a little better and understand sort of how the model can work. And when you do engage with us, what I'd coach you to coach them on is to not just ask the analysts who typically cover you and know your space. They'd be a data management or a security vendor or a security analyst and that sort of thing, but actually ask the adjacent analysts. And if I may, I'll take one brief story. I worked with a network infrastructure company in the U.S., who called us up and said, I want to speak to an enterprise architecture analyst. We said, why? And the EA analyst got on the phone and said, well, I'm happy to talk to you, but why on earth do you want to talk to me? Because I never talk about network infrastructure. You guys are just plumbing. I'm all about architecture and business process. And the client said, precisely. I want to understand how I can position my network infrastructure plumbing type company to be relevant to an enterprise architect. So that if push comes to shove, the enterprise architect in the enterprise buyer would say, well, yeah, I'll choose this company over these other ones because I know they've done a few things that seem really relevant to me. So if there's one advice, I would say move to a number four if you can, engage more informally and more frequently. The other piece is invest in adjacent markets, not those where you play in precisely today, but ones that are adjacent to yours. Either you want to enter those or they touch tangentially those markets that you're in today. If you do those things, I think you'd find greater value from your relationship with Gartner.
All right. This is great, guys. So bottom line here, using the analysts as coaches, Claire, is this myth or reality? What do you think?
I think it's reality, but you have to manage it and make it work on both sides, between the analysts and the execs. So, yeah.
Andrea?
Oh, reality, definitely. Mm-hmm. Proven reality for us.
Mm-hmm. June?
Yeah, same. Agree.
Carolyn, the last word.
I'll agree. I'll go with the flow. But I do think it's just getting it right and making sure you've got the right stakeholder who knows what the expectations are and the right analyst, and then trying to make that relationship work.
All right. That's great. Thanks so much, guys. And a big hand for our panelists. You did a great job. We'd love to take some questions from the audience if you have some questions for our panelists. Anybody? Any takers? But yes, that's right.
Who's buying the drink?
It's Listen, thanks so much for coming. You're full 2 hours of attention. We have some cocktails outside. And so thanks so much, and enjoy the rest of Barcelona. Thank you.